This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The United States walks away from the negotiations over North Korea.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Third day here in Hanoi, Vietnam. It's been a dramatic 24 hours. This entire day has been news-filled in Vietnam after President Trump and his delegation abruptly ended their talks with Chairman Kim a bit earlier today. There was an expected signing ceremony. It did not happen. There is an expected luncheon today with a camera trained on the table where no one showed. That did not happen.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
We had some options, and at this time we decided not to do any of the options, and we'll see where that goes. But it was a very interesting 2 days, and I think actually it was a very productive 2 days, but sometimes you have to walk, and this was just one of those times.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-311, excuse me, zero. Sometimes you have to walk. Why President Trump, quote, bailed on North Korea. That's the headline in Politico. But the president said sometimes you have to walk, and he did. Let me go right to Skip Ash, senior counsel for the ACLJ, retired colonel of the United States Army, served in Korea. You're not surprised.
I'm not surprised. I think the Kim Jong-un overplayed his hand. I think he looked at what was going on in Washington. They don't understand that these types of things bring pressure on this president. This president doesn't roll for that. So I think they went for a lot when they didn't have to. And by doing that, the president walked, and they never expected him to do that. They thought he needed a victory, and they were going to press for everything they could.
So let me ask you this. Normally, there's a lot of prep that goes into these. There was here. There were lines, though, that could not be crossed. Correct?
That's correct. I mean, there were certain things that we had to get. We could not give in on the pressure we're bringing on North Korea until we get certain things, and the Kim regime was not willing to do that. So I think, again, he misplayed and misunderstood the situation, but we could not give in on the sanctions until we have a great deal of give on the other side, and they just were not willing to do it this time. But I think they misread what was going on in Washington.
All right, let me go to Wes Smith, also in the military, colonel of the United States Army as well. Wes, president said sometimes you have to walk. He did.
Yeah, I mean, this is really part of a strategic poker game of sorts. But the playbook that North Korea has used for decades is the playbook that says we will give you certain things, we will make large promises in exchange for food, fuel, and the relief of economic sanctions. And then when that happens, when relief comes, their weapons programs continue unabated. And I think Kim, he's still trying to figure out Donald Trump. I'm glad that their relationship is better, and I think they do have something of a working rapport. But that old playbook is still there because he offered to close down their largest nuclear testing facility, the one that enriches plutonium. And yet, you know, our intelligence agencies say there are at least 12 other sites there and that they're continuing to enrich uranium. I'm not sure that Kim knew how much we knew about some of these other sites, but still he's using the old playbook. And in the future, he probably, we hope, will back away from some of that. But the playbook of both his father and his grandfather is that we promise things, we get relief, and then we continue with what we've always done. And I think there was some expectation on Kim's part that perhaps that would work this time. Maybe not completely, but that some sanctions would go away in exchange for closing the one big site, and that simply did not happen. The president is to be commended for not letting that happen.
Well, he had lines and he had procedures and he followed them, and it didn't go where I think ultimately anybody wanted it to go, but I don't think it means it's over. We'll talk about what this analysis means at the end. Your reaction to this, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. When we come back from the break, by the way, our team in Washington up on Capitol Hill right now on behalf of Pastor John Sow, who is a U.S. permanent resident from North Carolina. He is in jail in China. So we'll talk more about that when we come back as well. We'll get an update on a Supreme Court case. 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
The The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, welcome back to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. President, sometimes you have to walk. Let's play what he said.
We had some options, and at this time we decided not to do any of the options, and we'll see where that goes. But it was a very interesting 2 days, and I think actually it was a very productive 2 days, but sometimes you have to walk, and this was just one of those times.
So that's what he said. Sometimes you have to walk, and he did. I spoke to a couple of our team during the break. Let me go to Wes first. Wes, what's your reaction to this?
I think the president did exactly what he should do, in spite of the fact that some of the mainstream media were predicting that he was going to give away the farm. He absolutely did not. North Korea's old playbook of trying to get sanctions relief in exchange for virtually nothing is not working. This president is a different kind of president. And much like Reagan did with Gorbachev in Iceland in 1986, the president said, no sanctions relief unless you agree to work with us on complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. Kim was not willing to do that. I think the future, there's still hope that this will come about. They're still testing each other a bit. Kim's still trying to figure out President Trump, I believe. But the president did the right thing. In a friendly, not combative way, they shook hands as they left, simply walked away and said, well, we'll continue to talk later on.
Well, as I said, the president says sometimes you have to walk away. Harry, your reaction?
Well, my reaction is that the president was right and correct to walk away because Chairman Kim, at this particular point in time, is unprepared to offer clear and unmistakable evidence of North Korea's commitment to verifiable and irreversible elimination of North Korea's nuclear ambition. So long as they are unprepared to offer that, to put that on the table, and to offer concrete steps aimed at achieving that goal and objective, I think the president needs to walk away, and therefore his decision so far was correct. There's still an opportunity for future progress, but at this particular point in time, insufficient progress was on the table, and the president correctly walked away.
Now, normally that's negotiated pretty significantly beforehand, but is it in a situation, Skip, you know this area, so what was going on behind the scenes here?
Well, I think what was going on, again, as I said earlier, and that is that the North Koreans have misread the pressure being put on by the Democrats in Congress. And they were believing the calls that were coming over our own news networks that were saying that the president needs a victory. And therefore, they thought, okay, since he needs a victory, we're going to go out for as much as we can get. We're going to put pressure on him. If he needs a victory that much, then we'll be able to get a lot better deal. And what happened was, having misread our president, the president said, no deal is better than a bad deal. So he withdrew, and I think he left the door open. But I think he's sending another signal to the North Koreans that they better be ready to play ball. And I think this is also a time when the United States needs to consider strengthening the sanctions, because there are some things we can still do that would send an unmistakable message that without moving forward, we can move in a different direction that will not be in the interest of North Korea.
Yeah, I think that's right. Andy, your reaction to this? I'm going to play a comment in a minute.
Well, I think the president did exactly what the president was expected to do. This president, in any way, in any event, was expected to do, and that is he decided that I see no progress here, and I'm going to leave, because sometimes there's a series of no, 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 and sometimes yes, yes, yes. Negotiations go back and forth. This is the author of The Art of the Deal. He knows what he's doing. He's playing on the international scene. He is the pivotal character, the strongest man in the world and in the free world, and he says, look, I'll give you some concessions, but if you don't give me back what I think you ought to give me back, I'm walking. I'll see you another day.
Let me play John. Let me go to John, who's calling. He's on line one. John, go ahead.
Good morning, Jay and team. I admire and thank you for all you do. Andy just stole a lot of my thunder. I don't know how much of your listening audience has been in an actual negotiation. I'm a past president of a maritime union and was part of many, many contract negotiations.
Right.
And one thing I think people have to keep in mind is that a successful negotiation is a series of no followed by one yes. And for people to keep the faith, keep praying, and don't lose hope, and let the negotiations go on. I could not tell the general membership what was going on during the negotiations. Otherwise, they would have fell apart, and we wouldn't have gotten in anything. So I just want everybody to
very
keep
good,
the faith.
Very good insight. Appreciate that, John. Skip, what do you think?
I think that's exactly right. There are certain things. You know, we live in a society where everybody wants to know everything. But you can't operate sometimes in the diplomatic realm with everybody knowing everything. Certain things have to be discussed behind closed doors, because that's when you can be honest. That's when you can tell it like it is. And I think that's what's going on here. And I think the president not only has told Kim Jong-un how he feels and what's going on, but he has also demonstrated that in a public way, that the entire world gets the message that the United States wants a deal, but we don't need the deal as much as the North Koreans need it. We have more to give them than they have to give us, and therefore we have the initiative and we can walk away.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. You think the president did the right thing? What do you think about the situation with North Korea? Here's what the president said. It's number 12.
There is a gap. We have to have sanctions, and he wants to denuke, but he wants to just do areas that are less important than the areas that we want. We know the country very well, believe it or not. We know every inch of that country, and we have to get what we have to get, because that's a big give.
We know that country very well, believe it or not. We know every inch of that country. I'm going to go to Skip first. I'm going to go to our whole team on that. Skip, what does that tell you?
That tells us that we know that they're doing some things underhandedly. They've attempted to give us one thing while they're moving their forces around, trying to hide them in other places. And we are tracking that. So they're not getting away. They may be getting away with some things on the margins, but they're not getting away with the meat that we're looking for. And therefore, we're going to try to keep them honest. And I think I heard that Secretary Pompeo released some intelligence to them that showed that we knew where some of their facilities were that they had not declared. And that tells them that we have our eyes on a lot of things.
Wes, how do you view it?
Yeah, that was an excellent negotiating tactic on the part of the president to sort of subtly slip in, both him and Secretary Pompeo, that we knew more about their sites than the one that they have declared. But these are long-term strategic negotiations. We did not get here in 1 year. It was 8 months ago that Kim and President Trump first met. We're not going to solve this in a year. I think the fact that President Trump meets and talks with Kim is not only unprecedented, but it's effective, even though he's been criticized for it, because in the time that they have met over the last 8 months, there have been no nuclear tests. There have been no missiles fired over the Sea of Japan. I think their relationship, the rapport, is not fake. It's not contrived. I think they really do enjoy talking with each other. But so this is long-term negotiations. There is the possibility that we can solve this and that North Korea can join the community of nations and enjoy some of the prosperity that he saw in Vietnam. But it's not going to happen quickly.
We know the country very well, believe it or not, says the president of the United States. Harry, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that the president of the United States was indeed prepared for these negotiations. President Trump was unwilling to be played like former presidents of the United States. It's important to remember the history. So, for instance, President Clinton offered oil and aid, and North Korea received the oil and the aid, but they also kept their nuclear weapons plant intact. President Obama offered strategic patience. And what did we get in exchange for that? We got a cyber attack on the United States. So North Korea launched a cyber attack. This president, unlike President Obama, unlike President Clinton, is prepared for tough negotiations, and he demands something in return for these negotiations. That is evidence that North Korea is committed to irreversible and verifiable elimination of nuclear weapons.
Andy, you and I have done bilateral governmental negotiations before, trilateral for that matter. Where do you see it?
Well, I see it as progressing very slowly, but definitely in a positive direction. And we have, Jay, conducted, you and I, those kinds of negotiations and been part of them in the Middle East. There is no reason to suspect that Asia is any different from the Middle Eastern part of Asia, because people react the same way. This president is a keen negotiator, a very smart, a very perceptive man. He knows that we say the Middle East is 12-sided. I think Asia is 25-sided. And I think he realizes that it is a prism that has to be looked at very carefully, and he is doing the right thing in taking the approach that he is taking, an approach that that we took, that you took in the Middle East in connection with some negotiations we had several years ago on religious matters. The president is doing the same thing now with the chairman in Korea.
Confidence-building measures is what they're called. That means you take sometimes a couple steps forward, you may take one or two back. That's part of the process. All right, we're going to take your calls when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. As I said, our team's on Capitol Hill right now fighting for the freedom of an imprisoned Christian pastor. Your support of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org allows us to continue to do that work. We encourage you to go to that website. Back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in what's called the Brandenburg Peace Cross. It was a major case, a monument that's been there symbolizing the memorial for our World War II that were killed in action. And we filed an amicus brief in the case. Our friend Callie Shackerford from First Liberty, his group represented the military, the American Legion, who was the primary plaintiff in the case. And all reports are that a majority, this is coming from the Washington Post. This is interesting. A majority of the Supreme Court on Wednesday seemed to be searching for a way, maybe a narrow one, they say, to allow the Brandenburg's Peace Cross commemorating World War I dead to remain where it stood for nearly 100 years. So then it said conservative members of the court indicated they did not believe the Constitution's prohibition of government establishment of religion required the removal of from public life of all symbols of faith. Harry, this is a case we filed a brief in. This is an issue you've been following for years. I don't know exactly how they're going to come out on this, but I expect that it's going to be a positive decision that at least the cross stays. What do you think?
I think that's precisely correct. I think based on my reading of news reports, it's more likely than not going to be a 7-2 decision in favor of the Maryland Commission. It's important to note that not a single word of religious content appears anywhere in the monument. And so I think even the liberal justices of the Supreme Court were impressed that this particular cross does not violate the Establishment Clause. And the claim that it does violate the Establishment Clause is on very thin ice. Obviously, Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor certainly gave an indication that they are prepared to rule in favor of the plaintiffs and thereby support the removal of the cross. But that decision would make little sense given the purpose of the cross and given the fact that the cross stands as a monument to sacrifice individuals who gave their lives in defending the United States Constitution and the rule of law. So I certainly hope the Supreme Court reaches the correct decision in that case.
I think I'm very optimistic. Again, I don't know, are they going to get rid of the so-called Lemon Test, which is this Establishment Clause test that's been a disaster? Skip, I'm not sure about that, because we won't know until we get the opinion. But it was clear that the justices were looking for a way for this to come out in a positive direction.
Absolutely. We need to understand that this is just one cross of hundreds of crosses across the United States that were raised as monuments to the war dead in World War I and other wars. So if this one were to be taken down, are we then going to have to go through every military cemetery and every military memorial throughout the United States and then make a determination whether that's whether a cross is fundamentally a religious thing or whether this was a monument for the sacrifice of the men who gave their lives in World War I? And I think when you get to the point when you have to answer that question, I think it becomes simpler, because this was something that for many years in the United States, a cross, even though it's a religious symbol in some senses, it was also just considered a symbol of sacrifice that was quite apart from the Christian faith. And I think they're going to have to make that determination. And hopefully they will do that so that we don't remove every possibility just because certain people are offended by seeing a religious symbol that we have to remove all religious symbols. That in itself
makes no sense. We've been very successful in our litigation on these issues. We've had cross cases before in San Diego, Mount Soledad. We've had Ten Commandment monuments that we've won unanimously. This doesn't look like it's going to be it may be unanimous as to it staying up there. It doesn't look like it's going to be unanimous as to the rationale that the court reached. But, you know, Wes, you're a military man. I mean, these are important.
These are very important. And, of course, we all know that there is a group of our society that would like to have all religion totally expunged from American society. And yet American people, by and large, are religious people. One of the encouraging things that happened yesterday in the arguments was when Justice Breyer said history matters. This cross was a product of a certain time in American history when crosses were routinely used to memorialize war dead. And so I can see where the court would allow this cross to stay in place. And yet if someone were trying to erect a new cross for veterans who have died, the court might feel differently about it. but history does matter. This cross has been a symbol for a long time of war dead, both Catholics and Protestants. And my understanding is all 49 soldiers from that county that died were at least nominally Christian. They were either Protestant or Catholic.
Larry's calling on line one. Larry, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Doesn't the Constitution say that the government will not establish a religion that the people have to follow? Isn't that just cut and dried?
Yeah, so the placement of a religious symbol in a public place to commemorate the war dead or a historical fact, Andy, does not violate the Constitution.
No, it does not. The Constitution says Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of a religion. I don't see how putting up the Bladensburg Cross by the American Legion in this place in Maryland constitutes the establishment of a religion in violation of the Constitution. I'm a strict textualist. I read the Constitution as it was written and as it was passed in the 18th century, and I believe it does not in any way establish a religion. This cross has as its base four words: valor, endurance, courage, and devotion. Nearby, there are other memorials to veterans. This was a symbol that even Justice Breyer, as my colleague Wes said with respect to history counts. And I never thought I would be quoting Stephen Breyer with approval, but I do in this case.
He's heard of this before.
and you have to have a sense of history. I'm a historian. You have to have a sense of history, and you have to have an understanding of what the principles are upon which this nation was founded. You don't just wipe away all monuments whatsoever because they may have some religious overtones or implications. And I think that the decision, and I agree with Harry, I think we're going to have a 7-2 decision in favor of the cross remaining.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm not sure it'll be on that each one of them, Skip, will come to the same basis to keep it there, but I think they will. A majority of the court will say, yes, it stays. They may just get there through different routes.
I think that's exactly right. We may have multiple opinions, all concurring in the cross.
You can have as many opinions as you do judges in a case like that.
That's right. So we may have multiple opinions justifying why it's there. What I would hope would be that the court would come up with some workable rule. I think their jurisprudence right now is confusing to the lower courts. And that's why we have so many back and forth. I remember the time when the Ten Commandments monuments, two decisions came out the same day. One said it was unlawful.
Kentucky.
One said it was lawful.
Right. And, no good in Kentucky, was okay in Texas.
Right. And it was exactly the same monument. That is confusing not only to Americans, but to judges who have to interpret the law. We need a clearer rule.
All right. We're taking a break. But remember, we are here for another 30 minutes of the broadcast. So if you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, you can do that by going over to ACLJ.org. It's broadcast both audio and video there. You can also go on Facebook and Periscope, a number of stations, Sirius XM, of course, as well. So we encourage you to get with us and stay with us for the next half hour of the broadcast. We've got an email that's out today. Our team is in Washington. The reason Than's not on today, he's leading our team. We have CC Heil, our senior counsel, is up there as well. They're working for the release of a permanent resident, U.S. resident from North Carolina, Pastor John. He has been locked up in China for 2 years. We are working now with Congress for his release, also working with the White House. We appreciate your prayers for our team as they make the case for this pastor to be released from China. He's been there for 2 years. Again, same thing, charges that have nothing to do with reality. But you got to work these cases up. We're building the ground well of support for him right now. If you're not getting the email alerts from the American Center for Law and Justice, you need to do that by simply going over to ACLJ.org, that's ACLJ.org, and get our Facebook and Periscope, like those as well, and follow us on Twitter. Jay Sekulow has a page, I've got a Twitter feed, so does Jordan, so does the ACLJ. Back with more in a moment.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We had some options, and at this time we decided not to do any of the options, and we'll see where that goes. But it was a very interesting 2 days, and I think actually it was a very productive 2 days, but sometimes you have to walk. And this was just one of those times.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Sometimes you have to walk. When you're dealing with governmental, multi-governmental negotiations, these are complicated matters. You want confidence-building measures. And the president said, sometimes you have to walk. And that was one. They didn't leave angry, but they left. Here's what Secretary Mike Pompeo said, number seven.
I'm still optimistic. I'm hopeful that the teams will get back together in the days and weeks ahead and continue to work out. It's a very complex problem. We have said since the beginning that this would take time. Our teams have gotten to know each other better. We know what the limits are. We know where some of the challenges are. And I think as we continue to work on this in the days and weeks ahead, we can make progress so that we can ultimately achieve what it is that the world wants, which is to denuclearize North Korea, to reduce risk for the American people and the people all around the world.
All right, so a lot of calls coming in and comments going up, 1-800-684-3110. Lindy on Facebook said this, I totally trust the president to know when it is time to walk away. So let's put ourselves in the situation if you were the head of a country, Skip, or advising the head of a country. What are those lines?
Well, I think in this case, obviously, the North Koreans have destabilized all of Asia, all of East Asia with their nuclear program. They've started the Japanese coming back to rearm. They've done all sorts of things. And what we need to do is we need to get rid of those weapons. So we need to keep in mind a couple of things. You know, we're now having two meetings within 1 year, and we're trying to undo 70-plus years of intransigence on the part of the North Koreans. It's going to take some time. We just need to be patient. But at the same time, there are certain things we cannot do. We cannot allow them to get to increase their stockpile of nuclear weapons and to have them able to be fired on the intercontinental ballistic missiles. That would endanger at least the western part of the United States. We can't allow that to happen. So we need to bring pressure, but we also it needs to be a carrot and a stick. What we would need to do is we need to have a stick saying, do this, and when you do get to a certain threshold, then we will begin to show you why it's in your best interest. And I think that's we've all discussed the last couple of days why it was wise for the president to have chosen Hanoi, Vietnam, our enemy of the United States for many years. Then we normalized relationships. We began to trade with them, and they have forged ahead. They've moved ahead rapidly with economic growth and wealth increase. They're one of the best growing countries right now economically. And so we gave an example to Kim Jong-un to say this could be North Korea if you just play ball with us and do the same thing.
So, Annie, so we always talk about symbolism being important. The place was important. It did get what the president wanted, but the symbolism was there.
It was. This was a nation that, as Skip was saying, we were 50 years ago, we were bombing. I mean, Hanoi was a target of American bombers, and we were engaged in a terrible war, the Vietnam War, in which they were our enemies. We've seen them as communists and the infiltration of communism into South Vietnam from North Vietnam. And now it's a trading partner. It's not an ally, and that's in the sense of England, for example. But it is a country with whom we have normalized relations, which is making enormous economic progress. Three of their airlines are buying Boeing 787s and 737s, and this Sabre Corporation in the United States, they're going to buy hundreds of millions of dollars of technology from them. So that means that they are coming into the world, into the 21st century. And what the president, whoever selected Hanoi, was saying to Kim Jong-un was, you could be the same. You could do the same. Just open your eyes wide and see what it is that you have here as an opportunity and come into the real world and get out of the hermit kingdom.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We've got great comments coming in, great calls coming in, 1-800-684-3110. Again, don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ here at the end of the month. Literally, boy, that went quick. You can do that at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Make sure you're getting our newsletters, our email alerts. Make sure you're also on our Twitter feeds. I've got one at Jay Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow, at ACLJ. We're going to be back with more of your calls at 1-800-684-3110 for our Facebook and Periscope audience, television audience. We've got a special video coming up, but give us a call, 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back. Michael on Facebook says, how does the President of the United States get Kim Jong-un back to the table? And I think that this is an important statement. How does the President entice Chairman Kim to get to a deal done and scratch the old playbook and move forward? Harry?
I think the answer is very straightforward. I think the President of the United States must continue with America's maximum pressure campaign. So if Chairman Kim wants to engage in significant negotiations which lead to significant progress, then he has to put his cards on the table, and he has to be willing to produce evidence suggesting that North Korea is prepared to commit, not talk about committing, to eliminating its nuclear weapons program. Until that happens, I think maximum pressure needs to be in place, which means sanctions, and as I think Skip correctly points out, perhaps even ramping up the sanctions. In the interim, we can keep negotiations going at a lower level, but if Chairman Kim wants a signed agreement with the President of the United States, he needs to use a vernacular phrase, play ball. President Trump is unlike President Clinton. Keep in mind the failed history of prior negotiations with North Korea. They haven't worked. We've given them oil. We've given them money. We've given them aid, but they kept their weapons program. This president is unprepared to follow that playbook.
I think the president also did not want just simply symbolism here, Wes. I don't think it was just about symbolism. He wanted a positive step forward.
Right, right. And I think he went into this with his eyes open. He knew that it might be, you know, it might end up the way it did, walking away, but there was always the possibility that Chairman Kim would actually bring something meaningful to the table and work with our president. When that didn't happen, he simply left. I think going forward, we really do need to keep the dialogue open, but increase the sanctions and encourage the other nations of the world not to thwart the sanctions. Because as Skip mentioned, there's ship-to-ship transfer of oil and coal, which is not supposed to be happening. North Korea continues to sell weapons technology to other nations, including Iran. They continue to send their agents and their military trainers all over Africa, training different people down there. They certainly are involved with cyber crime, cyber fraud, the theft of intellectual property. So they are doing their best to go around the sanctions to get some relief. We need to make sure that some of those loopholes can be closed and that we increase the sanctions. One of the things I believe about Chairman Kim, I think at some level, when his people are starving and from time to time they are really experiencing famine, I don't think he cares so much about that. But when he can't feed his military, then his security is threatened because the military is what keeps him in power. So I think if we increase sanctions to the point where they really are struggling, you know, even more than they are now, and that's regrettable, I think perhaps that might bring him back to the table. I was encouraged that he is staying in Vietnam until Saturday, Chairman Kim is, because Vietnam is not only a former enemy, they are still a communist nation, and yet they are thriving and they are a trading partner with the United States. That example is before Kim over the next 48 hours, and I hope that it will have some effect.
I've got an interesting, I want to play President Trump, this is number 16, talking about there was a potential we could sign a deal, and then talk to Andy and Wes and Skip about what that, and the whole team here, what that means.
There was a potential we could have signed something today. I could have 100% signed something today. We actually had papers ready to be signed, but it just wasn't appropriate. I want to do it right. I'd much rather do it right than do it fast.
How do you read that, Andy?
Well, I read that as Donald Trump at his best. He's not going to do something just to make a political headline that is just going to say, well, I had an agreement and I wrote it and look at what I've achieved, you know, and it's a meaningless utterance. Just a line. He's going to do something that's substantive is what that means. And if it takes time for him to arrive at something that's substantive, then we'll use that time and we'll wait for the appropriate moment to do it. And that is the art of the deal. And it's being used by the master deal maker.
So let me take another step here then. And I'm going to go to Harry and then to Skip. So we know that the deal could not be reached. Wes was just talking about increasing sanctions. What is the way forward here in your view, Harry?
Well, I think we should follow the advice of Andy Economou. We should make haste slowly. In other words, we should continue to impose sanctions and enforce those sanctions, but also let the North Koreans know that we are prepared to reach an agreement. But the agreement must be verifiable. The agreement must be irreversible. And until North Korea is prepared to take concrete steps, which are indeed verifiable, we will continue to play hardball.
So, all right. So I think that's exactly correct. Skip?
Yeah, I think we need to bring both direct and indirect pressure on the North Vietnamese or the North Korean regime. One way of bringing indirect pressure is to encourage the Japanese to continue their military buildup, because that is going to unsettle the Chinese to a certain extent. And when we explain to the Chinese that the Japanese are doing this, we're encouraging that is because of the unstable regime and the nuclear weapons in North Korea. Then we might raise the pressure from the Chinese on the North Koreans. At the same time, we need to take direct action, and that is on the oil transfer at sea, the use of banks in Asia to launder money, all those types of things. We need to go in there, root out where the North Koreans are trying to infiltrate and work around the sanctions, and we need to shut those loopholes. That brings direct and indirect pressure against the North Koreans. At the same time, we need to keep our channels open so they say, okay, we're ready to talk again. And then we, at a lower level, say, what are you willing to talk about?
Right.
And then we can see whether we need to go and bring the presidents together again or whether we need to.
I was going to ask about that. So, you know, Andy, you and I handled a very complex, I mean, not near as complex as the situation on the Korean Peninsula, but it was a very complex situation in the Middle East that required trilateral negotiations, basically three governments involved. We did this in Jerusalem. It took a lot. We were there for, it was a summit. We were there for, I think, about 4 or 5 days. Steps forward, step back, a couple of steps forward, a lot of steps back, then all of a sudden you get 5 steps forward and you're meeting with the Prime Minister of Israel and working on it. I mean, so these things have a rhythm to them, but it's Festina lente, make hay slowly. You got to be cautious.
That's right. And I wish I could say that that was my expression, but it was actually the expression of the Emperor Augustus when he took over and created the new and improved Roman Empire in the first century BC. But that's exactly right. These things don't happen quickly. You want to make haste, but you have to do so in a measured fashion. You don't give up anything right off the top, but you do it in a carefully orchestrated way by give and take, by a series of the caller who said from Massachusetts, no, 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 yes, you've moved a baby step forward, and that's how it is. So the president was not going to come home, I think, and make a proclamation of something that was empty. He would rather have said, well, we made some progress. We didn't make the progress on the major issue that we wanted to, but maybe next time we'll do so. And as Harry said, keep up the sanctions, keep up the pressure. Eventually they'll crack.
Joy on Facebook asks a really good question. What do you think the international reaction to all of this will be? I'll start with Skip.
Well, I think President Trump is controversial around the world. I think people are constantly surprised by what he has been able to achieve, but he achieves it in a manner that sometimes ruffles feathers. So I think there's a low-key idea that they wish that he would fail. But I think at the same time, if he does succeed, and when he does succeed, they are grateful that that happens. But I think right now they're going to evaluate this. I think they're surprised in their view of him that he would walk away and say, okay, we haven't achieved what I wanted to achieve, and we're going to walk away. That doesn't happen publicly very often around the world. Most of those types of situations happen below the radar, and nobody knows about those. And to have it happen so publicly, I think, is they're still trying to evaluate how the president operates and whether this is going to be a long-term good for the United States and for the world.
All right, we will be taking questions when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. Last segment, so you could talk to us about a variety of topics, but we've got some open lines, 800-684-3110. Really quickly here, Harry, international reaction.
Well, I think President Trump has garnered additional respect both for himself individually and for the United States. I think, once again, he has proven to be a tough negotiator, and he has shown that he is willing to walk away unless he is able to achieve his goals and objectives in putting America first.
I think that's an excellent way of putting it. All right, we're taking a break. Coming back, 1-800-684-3110. We've got some lines open for you. Facebook and Periscope. Go ahead and get your comments in via Facebook and Periscope. We'll read those as well. We've got some great comments that have come in today. We've got our team right now on Capitol Hill fighting for the freedom of an imprisoned Christian pastor. He's a U.S. permanent resident from North Carolina, spent 2 years locked up in a Chinese prison, unable to see his wife and children. We're fighting for him. Your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. There's an email out. Respond to it. If you're not getting those emails, sign up for them at aclj.org. When we come back, 1-800-684-3110, and we've got a video, another video coming up for you right now.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4, battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5, hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
So here's a good question that I have, and that is to our entire panel, do we think there'll be a Summit 3 before the 2020 elections? And wouldn't the prerequisite to that be that there has to be confidence-building measures that are actually measurable that have taken place before there's another one? So, Skip, first, do you think there will be one, and what would be the criteria?
I think there may be one, but I think right now it's on the part of the North Koreans to demonstrate that it's worth meeting with them, that they have something they're willing to put on the table that's worth to get together again. And if they don't do that, if they don't let somebody know that through the lower-level channels, I think the president has no reason to go back and talk to them.
So let me go right to Harry. Your thought on that. So the question is, A, do you think there's a possibility of realistic possibility of another summit? Would that be a good idea? And what would be the measures before you'd allow that to happen?
Well, I think there is certainly the possibility that that might occur. But I also think that the burden of proof should remain on North Korea to show that they are indeed committed to reaching a good deal. A good deal for the United States in addition to being a good deal for North Korea. So far, if you look at the entire history of negotiations with North Korea, it's been basically a vexed history. And so I think we should be very, very wary unless they can produce evidence of their commitment. So I would suggest that the odds of another summit are probably less than 30%.
All right. So, Wes, let me ask you the same thing, but also add this with Clarkson on Facebook. The president appears to be holding the North Korean leaders accountable for actually measurable progress.
Yeah, absolutely. What we're witnessing, Jay, is the right kind of strategic patience. The old kind was weak. It facilitated North Korea and their misbehavior. This is the right kind of strategic patience, where we are looking for something that is meaningful and we're looking for something that is permanent. President Trump, say what you will, is at his best when he is negotiating about something. And Secretary Pompeo indicated that State Department teams will continue to work on this. They will continue to reach out to North Korea. And so I think there's the possibility of another summit before 2020, but something would have to be on the table that moves us towards something that is meaningful and permanent. For example, something that North Korea has not done, they refuse to do this, is to allow any outside inspectors into their nation. If they would agree that they would start taking the concrete steps of dismantling their nuclear capabilities and allow outside inspectors to come in, that would be the kind of thing. We're not going to eliminate all of the weapons. That's going to take years. It's a long, complicated process. But if they would agree to start that and to have inspectors there to witness that, that might be the kind of thing that would bring the two leaders back to the table.
Let me take a stab at this, Andy, and then I want to get your comments. You and I have, as I said, we've done these negotiations. We've done bilateral, trilateral governmental negotiations before to get matters resolved. But I look at this situation, and you've got a set of measurables that there was obviously a baseline that was not reached. Now, I'm all in favor. You and I understand sacred space. We understand symbolism. We talk about the Ministry of Presence, the fact that the president actually went there and that Kim actually went there, Chairman Kim actually went there. That those are important. But you have to have measurables to proceed.
Yes, you do. And I think the president is correct in establishing a baseline and saying, I've got to see some movement on your part. I agree with Skip that the ball is in the court of North Korea right now. They have got to show some willingness to move and change what has hitherto been an unchangeable position with respect to things. They have, I heard the president, the chairman, Kim Ung, say that an office in Pyongyang would be welcomeable. Poor translation of something that would not be foreclosed, I think, as he was saying, something that we would achieve. Well, now that may be the first step. We open up an office there. This may take a long time. This is not going to happen over the course of just a few months or even a few years. It may take a long time for this relationship to grow and blossom where there is trust on both sides. Up to this point with Clinton and Obama and that ill-fated trip that Jimmy Carter made over there, that have not shown the movement that we would have wanted. But now you've got the president himself leading the negotiations, not some second rate or second tier, I should say, diplomatic surrogate. But you've got the president and you've got the chairman meeting in public, in open space. I think it's going to happen, but it's going to take a great deal of time and a great deal of patience.
So let me, last question on this, Skip, then I want to talk about Pastor Saul's case because that's moving. We've got some activity on that right now. What do you expect is the next moves? Who should be making the next moves, and what are our kind of lines of demarcation?
I think the next move is going to be made at the State Department level. It's going to be the secretary or his assistants. There is a person who's appointed as the point man with respect to North Korea. I think it's going to be at that level. They're going to continue to have contact. They're going to continue to talk. And I think at that point in time, there may be some explanation that's needed for the – we don't understand the North Koreans. They don't understand us. What we need to do is to make sure we explain each other to one another. And I think the United States has to explain this, that will be your best friend if you cooperate with us. Just look at the Vietnamese situation. But at the same time, we expect you to act with us honestly, and we expect progress to be made in a timely manner, and it needs to be verifiable. And once they understand that, and they understand maybe this extra few days in Vietnam for Kim Jong-un is valuable, because maybe the officials there will say, hey, this is what happened here, and explain to him how we operate, with the idea that but we have to have some agreement before we meet next time that something substantive is going to take place, because I don't think otherwise the president is putting his prestige on the line for nothing.
All right, so that's going to do it for our discussion on the summit in Vietnam. I want to take the last minute and a half here and talk about what our team's doing today in Washington, D.C. So right now, Dan Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs, C.C. Heyer, our senior counsel that handles a lot of these cases involving in not only international diplomacy, but those people being detained because of their faith. Right now, they are in Washington on Capitol Hill fighting for the freedom of an imprisoned Christian, Pastor John Sow, a U.S. permanent resident. He lives in North Carolina. He has spent nearly 2 years locked up in a Chinese prison. He's not seen his wife or his children. He was sentenced to 7 years as part of a systematic crackdown on Christianity in southwest China. He is in pain. He's suffering from health issues, and he's lost over 50 pounds. Yet to date, he's been denied any proper medical care. And the Chinese courts, which is unfortunate there, have just unjustly postponed his appeals for a fourth time. So every time the appeal comes up, they simply move it back 2 months. He shouldn't suffer another day in prison for having to live out his Christian faith. So we sent our team up to Washington, D.C., out of our Washington, D.C. office. But we're at a critical moment, and we need you to sign on to this pastor's petition. This is a case where we're just now building the support necessary to move this forward. So let me encourage you here, very, very important that we talk about this and get people interested in this. So go to aclj.org and sign on to that petition. You got our email. You can sign it there as well. It's an easy way to do it. Let me encourage you to do that as well as we build the support. Our team's in Washington. Of course, we have a permanent office there, but we've brought in other reinforcements, so to speak, in Washington, D.C. on this right now. You pray for Pastor Saul and his family. Pray for our team that's up there. We'll talk to you on the broadcast tomorrow. Have a great day.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.